Recorded live.
From 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can get more info about this show by visiting our website, householdstress.com. Listeners can participate in one of our live weekly talk shows by calling in or logging on to householdstress.com from your personal computer as an anonymous guest. Phone lines are open right now, but this show is strictly for men only, so call into the hottest talk show in America. Now, we have a couple rules, and they are absolutely no profanity, and no politics, and more importantly, no racial stuff. This show is apolitical and race neutral so that we can make sure that any man can feel comfortable on our show. And furthermore, this ain't Bible study, fellas. We want you to just be able to come to our show as a man, and that is it. The virtual talk show always presents the hottest topics for discussion, and tonight is no different. Tonight's topic is raising a special needs child. My name is Rodney, and I'll be your pilot for the evening. And I've got a lot of material, and the hope is that I can get this plane off the ground and ultimately land on a safe conclusion. This is a fluid conversation, so if you do have something to say, please feel free to do so. Or if you just prefer to listen, that's absolutely fine too. But please, please, please try to hang on until the end, because you'll definitely want to hear the conclusion to this episode. All right, with all that said, let's get started. Raising a special needs child. What are special needs? When you heard the show topic this evening or last week when I rolled it out, what immediately comes to your mind when you hear special needs as it relates to children? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? Anybody?
Well, I'll tell you what, that term has always bothered me, because I think everybody's got special needs. I know I do.
Okay. All right. Good words. Good words. Anybody else?
When we grew up, we called a spade a spade.
Okay. Anybody else? When you heard the term raising a special needs child, what came to your mind?
A kid that's not normal.
Okay. A kid that's not normal. Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I would say a child that has EBD, autism, Down syndrome, something along those lines.
Yeah, so
that
basically
needs special care.
Yeah, so basically a child that had some physical and or mental disabilities. Does anyone on the line have a special needs child?
I do.
All right, brother, how old is the child?
My son is.
Go ahead.
My son is 14.
Okay. And what kind of special needs does he have?
He has intellectual disability and some physical motor skill delays.
Okay. Anybody else have a special needs child?
I have a daughter who is 8 years old.
Okay. And what kind of special needs does she have, brother?
She has Asperger's.
Asperger's, and what you got to give me some details on that. What's I've heard of it, but you know, I'm not familiar with as far as what does Asperger's mean? Or I'm sure it can come in various forms, but what is it? What does it mean as far as it relates to your daughter?
Well, basically, it's like it's a form of autism, but
mm-hmm.
It's only a very mild side spectrum, I guess. You know, autism is a very broad spectrum, and Asperger's is a very mild form of autism, for lack of better words. Her special needs would be more so some of her social skills. She's delayed in those areas, whereas though she's 8 years old going on 9, and she probably functions more so socially on a 3 to 4 year old level. But education-wise, I mean, she's right there. She's very smart and, you know, playful. If you met the a kid like her, you would not recognize that she has any type of special needs at all. It would take some time to be around her and then pick up on the fact that, okay, she's doing things a little young for her age.
Wow, good words. Good words. Good words. Thanks, brother. Anybody else have a special needs child? I've got to ask this before I go any further. Is special needs even the politically correct terminology to use? I mean, is that the okay terminology to use when we refer to these cases, as the brother said, Asperger's, or the other brother said, intellectual disabilities and mobility? Is that the politically correct term to use, or is there another term that y'all have heard or y'all are more comfortable with?
I'm comfortable with special needs. I think that it sounds to me to be a bit more sensitive, you know, than saying that, like, the back in the day, like I heard the brother say, call a spade, but, you know, they either call the person, was like LD or something like that, or like retarded or something. You know, special needs just is a lot more broader, and I think it's, you know, it's more acceptable.
Okay, good words, gotcha.
Yeah, I think what one of the things that one of the terms or phrases that kind of got changed was mental retardation now referred to as intellectual disability, and I think that's where the political correctness, that's the politically correct term today, and special needs is also politically correct as a broad term to address children or people who need that special different needs.
Okay. All right. And let me ask you this, brother, and could you speak up just a little bit, but did you and your wife ever have the conversation about whether y'all were going to have children or not?
No. That whether or not to have children was never a question, no.
Okay.
I was always assumed to be a yes.
And did y'all agree on how many children?
I think we knew that there would be at least two. Flirted around with the idea of three, but opted to stop at two.
And was the number dependent on the sex of the kids? Like, you need two boys, two girls? Or?
No.
Just the number?
Nope, not in my case.
And during these conversations, did it ever cross either one of your minds if one of the kids would have special needs?
I don't think so. I doubt that we spent, you know, more than a minute considering. I mean, with any pregnancy, I'm sure that there are people who, just about everybody, there's some degree of concern as to whether or not, the child's going to be healthy, walking around. A mom carried a baby for 9 months. There's a lot of things can happen. There's so many potential environmental impacts today. There's so much information flowing out there. Don't eat this. Don't eat that. The fish has got mercury. The air is polluted. All kinds of stuff. And so I'm sure that our concerns were no greater than the next person, but not it wasn't something that I had great concern about.
Gotcha. Anybody else? You know, when you had that discussion about, yeah, we want a boy or a girl, or, the number. I mean, did it ever come up, whether or not, what would happen if, as the brother said, one of the children had special needs? Did that ever come up in your conversation?
I mean, obviously, I don't think.
Yeah, let me jump in here. Hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, brother. Yep.
Yeah, with my family, we have muscular dystrophy in the family, so it was a consideration with, you know, my wife and I discussed it, you know, what would happen if our child was born with muscular dystrophy, but it didn't happen, but, you know, we had the discussion.
Okay, good words, because it basically ran in the family, so it's more likely than not, so, but you said it didn't happen in your family?
It didn't happen with my kids, at least not yet anyway.
Okay, all right, good words. Go ahead, brother. Brother Delaware, you were saying?
No, I was just saying that it's one of those conversations when you think about having children. I don't think anybody goes along the lines to try to hint to, you know, saying, well, what if this happened, what if that happened? Everybody prays and hopes that you would have a healthy child. I have a nephew who is quadriplegic. And, in the womb, unbeknownst to the doctors and everything, he had the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck, but there was no stress. So, you know, he stayed in the womb with this umbilical cord wrapped around his neck and, you know, doing labor continually to, lose oxygen and everything. And, you know, as a result, he is now a quadriplegic. So, I mean, it's, you know, you can go, like you say, go through your 9 months of pregnancy, be healthy, everything checks out fine. You know, all the tests that you ran, you know, for Down syndrome, you know, RSV, you know, respiratory, you know, virus and things like that, you know, and carriers and everything. You know, you pass the test, and then next thing you know, something like this happens. You know, it's nobody's fault. And then, like I said, the end result is, you know, he is going to be in this state for the rest of his life. And I think, honestly, once that happens, you know, especially on the first child, you know, which is in the case of my nephew, that talk is now evident for the next child, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, and I think that you bring up a good point that, you know, would y'all say that you would think, you know, because you were saying that everything went fine in the womb and then, you know, unbeknownst to anybody, the doctors or anything, you know, he had the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck. But do y'all think that it would have been better? And this can go out to the guys who mentioned that they have children with special needs as well. But do y'all think it would have been better to know that if your child was going to be a special needs child before they were born? Or would you rather, you know, find out at delivery that they were going to be a special needs child? How do y'all feel about that? Anybody?
I don't think in my case, in my particular case, that it would have made a difference. I probably would have been more stressed if I'd have known at the time, because I'd have been like panicking. But the way I found out was fine. I think was adequate.
And what point did you realize your child was going to have special needs? Was it during the pregnancy or?
Oh, this was after.
After.
He was probably about four. 4 or 5 years of age.
Okay. So it was, the child had pretty much grown up a little bit. So how did you know? Like, was it you kind of found out through the doctor, or you kind of just made an extra visit to the primary care physician? I mean, how did you determine your child was going to have special needs?
Well, like I said, if you're around her long enough, you'll notice some small things that she would do, and but the big hint or big key for us, I would say, is when we took her to like daycare. The daycare said, "Listen, you know, you should look into getting your child tested." My wife took offense to it at first, but I mean, you know, I didn't, because I seen some of the things that she would do at home, and it's really hard for me to describe it. More so, just like little strange sounds that she would make, you know, at 4 years of age, you know, or the way that she would just look off into just like in a daze, you know, like a kid would daydream, but it was just a little different looking at her. But when she went to daycare, they had, you know, recommended that she got tested, and we took her to another daycare, and they said the same thing. And then since then, we've always had her going to like therapy or something like that. And they never could diagnose her because she was so young. And then when she turned six or seven is when they finally said it was Asperger's is what she had.
Good words, good words. Anybody else? At what point did you realize your child was going to be special needs? Go ahead, brother.
My son was younger. When he was like a year and a half old, he had a seizure for the first time, and we ended up spending a night in Duke University pediatric intensive care. And so right away that triggered some concern. And he had motor skill delays because he didn't start walking until within weeks after him having the seizure at like a year and a half. And like the previous brother mentioned, he started going to a half day preschool type program, and was having trouble with just navigating a set of stairs that only had two steps, and just having trouble processing with all the things, all the stimulation going on around him, and being able to focus on walking down the steps. A lot of reliance on he liked to have a lot of physical contact, liked to have his pacifier a lot, things like that. And that was our first indication that he might have health issues that we'd have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Good words, good words. And honestly, fellas, I want to rewind just a tad bit. Say that you did know, you were notified, doctor's report or something going on, and you were notified that the child that your wife was carrying was going to have special needs. Would anybody on here have considered an abortion if you knew your child was going to have special needs? Would you have even entertained that?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Speak on it, brother. That wouldn't even come a question at all?
Not a question. Not a question. Because, just as the brother's on the phone talking right now, like I said, my nephew, he's a quadriplegic, so a lot of these functions he would never be able to do from childhood to adulthood, if he lives that long. So if you were told, during your pregnancy that you were going to have a special needs child, you don't know, as my brother on the phone now, he has a child that's, probably still fully functioning, can do some things on her own, but, she has a mild case of autism. You don't know what that special need would be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So to go and to even consider ending a blessing that God has bestowed upon you, that wouldn't even be in the thought process, man. You just have to ride that wave.
Good words, good words.
I think it kind of depends if you look at it as a child or if it's a choice. Those who look at it as just a choice and a fetus, they don't look at it as a child, and it's not taking a life.
Good words.
Yeah,
good words.
You never know what reason a person's destiny is, and the reason God has brought that person into this world. And I know, from my own perspective, for my son, he has some difficulties, but the number of people who have come to us and told us, what a great kid he is, or he's, I remember one brother telling me, he's just happy all the time. I've never seen that kid not smiling. And I heard another brother tell me, he just draws you in, and you just hang out with him, and he's just fun to hang around. So I'm sure there are people of a certain ilk who have already laid out some expectations for their lives, for their children, and they've got this well-defined roadmap, and if you know something comes up that doesn't fit the roadmap, I'm sure that there are people who like the brother said, it's you know, they're not thinking of that fetus as a child. It's a choice, and you know.
Hey, so let me flip it for a second.
Go ahead.
And make it even harder than abortion. So in my situation, my cousin has a child who choked on a grape at 1 year old. So now this child is comatose, right? So he's, I guess, 8, 9 years old now. So he's just kind of there. The parents have been, you know, taking care of him for, you know, X number of years. And I know they've had some various problems with him, you know, where he's had to go to the emergency room and things like that. And I know I talked to them a couple of years ago, and I think at one point they had a DNR on him. So how do you guys feel about that? Right, if you had a kid who's never going to function, right, he's just kind of laying there, and, you know, with DNR, you can choose to, you know, give the child care or let him go.
But a kid who prior to that incident happening was functioning normally.
Fully
right?
Functional.
Fully functional. But that's up to one year old. Since then it's nothing. Feeding tube, diapers, just there. Right? That's a tougher call.
Oh yeah.
Because now you know, you love that child, you can see him every day. But then you know there's no future. So what do you do? Do you continue or do you let him go? If you let him go, did you kill him or did you just let him go?
But you say there's no future according to who?
According to the doctors.
Correct. So whose report you going to believe?
Well, the mother is a doctor. And the
I'm not judging. I just asked, you know, that's what you have to stand on. And you have to, you know, I think that's a decision you got to make with you and your Lord.
Right. Well, for more information, the mother's a doctor, and the husband is a minister.
Wow. That's an interesting dynamic, and especially in this situation. But that's a heavy question, brother.
And when you say to, you know, I'm pretty sure there's been so many complications that has happened ever since this child has been in the state. And when it says do not resuscitate, you know, I kind of look at it as, you know, I guess you want to say that the child doesn't even know that he is suffering. But that do not resuscitate doesn't come from the neglect of the parents, because there's so many complications that can happen up to that point. You know what I'm saying? So if they have to rush themselves to the hospital and the doctor's saying, you know, what we're doing right now is we're basically keeping them alive.
Mm-hmm.
There's really nothing else that we, you know what I'm saying? There's really nothing else that we, it's not from the neglect of the parents. The parents didn't treat him like it was Shiloh. Terry Shiloh.
Terry Shiloh.
You know, where they ultimately took a feeding tube from them. You know what I'm saying? So I do not resuscitate if somebody just has passed away and you don't want any means of resuscitation to happen.
Yeah,
I think that's just kind of looking at that. Yeah. I mean, kind of listening to that story, kind of the heart goes out. You know what I mean? And it's one of those situations that even listening to the stories like we're having right now, you don't know, like you said, you don't know what that other person is thinking or going through.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard to even say, you know what I mean? That's a real tough situation right there.
Yeah, good words. And
now, if you had a choice to remove the feeding tube, would you?
I've had that talk before. honestly... And I know that, you know, that long down the line, that, you know, you don't even think about your hospital bills or what comes after. But if there is still life in the body of any family member of mine, I would not do it.
Yeah, I don't think I could.
I don't think I would do that.
See myself doing that.
But you got to ask yourself this question. I'm just going to make it tough. Are you doing this for you or are you doing this for your child?
I'm honestly saying I am a selfish person when it comes to that.
Right.
I, you know what I mean? I just kind of looking at that whole thing, I guess I'm on that glimmer of hope. You know what I'm saying? That you know, I guess that I have so much faith, you know what I mean? And to hopes that, you know, something may happen. I don't want to facilitate that. I don't want to facilitate, you know, or me being the one to say, yeah, I agree to doing that, and ultimately sending, you know, sending my child or any of my family members home to be with God. I don't know how much more I would be able to, you know what I mean, feel about myself when it comes to that. You know what I mean? I'm just, I guess I'm just one of those people that I'm a hopeful person. Every day I wake up, I'm happy about my life. You know, got to see another day, and I just can't see myself kind of facilitating that, you know, taking that tube out. I just don't see myself doing that.
Is there a difference between that and the Jack Kevorkian deal?
Yeah,
like Dr. Death.
Kevorkian, you got to choose that for yourself. It's
not, I understand.
It's
but
not
I'm,
somebody making that choice for you.
Well, okay.
So it's different.
You know, and there's people that are in such pain that say, you know, please help me. I'm gonna assist you in this. And I mean, you know, would you be able to assist a family member that asked you that?
Well, here's the deal. I know we're about to get off on a tangent. You know, we're kind of the same subject, but let's take it to parents or yourself. If you know how you feel about the situation and how you couldn't make that decision for your loved one. So what you should do, like if you think you ever have to deal with that with a wife or a parent or whatever, you need to get them to make that decision beforehand, so you don't have to make it after the fact.
That's true. Because I
personally was asked to make that decision for my dad, and I couldn't do it. I was like, you know, the doctor told me what I need to do, and I was like, no, I can't. You know, I just can't do it. And so he made that decision for himself.
That's called an advanced medical directive, and that's a good thing to choose if you don't want to be existent upon a machine.
Right.
But if you have to make, you know, to make that call for your child that is in a vegetative state from 1 year old, well, that's a tough call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can say, okay, you know, I'm going to let this child, you know, God, if you take this child, you take this child. But you say, remove the feeding tube, starve my child to death, do it. I mean, I'm not saying anything but somebody that can, but I couldn't do it.
No, I couldn't do that either, and they're not doing that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that that could be a situation like this other woman that, you know, that they basically starved to death.
That's hard quick.
Yeah, and I want to bring it, good chat, fellas. I want to bring it back to the special needs child. And just rewind it just a little bit. If your wife was on the pill, did anybody consider that, you know, her taking birth control pills had anything to do with your child having special needs? I mean, did you consider that at all? Or did you think about that? Say, man, she was taking the birth control pills for 8 years, you know, before we could see. I mean, did that even cross your mind? I mean, I don't know. I'm just asking.
Yeah,
that never crossed my mind.
Yeah, it never crossed my mind that it could lead to problems.
Okay.
You know, I think that you know, when we deal with our children, we always look at, what did I do? Is there something I did or could have done to help, you know, to make this situation better or worse? We look at our children in all kind of, you know, situations, not just medical or physical. But when it comes down to it, you know, most people have, you know, make the best decision from where they're at for their children. I mean, they don't, you know, they don't kill them and stuff them in a truck for a month. You know, I mean, we...
Yeah.
Decisions for our children, it may not be the right decision. We may not know that taking this or doing that could possibly harm them, but when situations come up, we tend to look at ourselves and say, geez, is there something I could have done or seen, or maybe this or maybe that? But most people, you know, make the best decision from where they're at the point. Now, that doesn't mean it's the best decision, but based on where, you know, the miles they walk, the information they have, most people make the decision to protect their children.
Yeah.
Or they stick them in the trunk for a month and go party. I don't know.
I mean, you you definitely, you know what I mean, when you're going through that and you're taking your birth control and everything, you know, with my kids and my wife, I guess I never thought about it. And, you know, thank God that my kids are healthy. But it's like after you read certain stories and you find out that all of these medicines that are now being consumed by people and entering the body, like you just don't know that, you know, you don't know what your genetic makeup is internally. You don't know that your body is not adapting to, you know, maybe the prenatal vitamins or the birth control that you're on. You don't even know these things until your child is born. You know what I'm saying? So,
and the bottom line is there's side effects to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You don't know, you know, I mean, you know, you read studies of, well, you know, you shouldn't get your kids vaccinated because that causes autism. Then they got a study that says, no, it's perfectly safe. And you don't know.
Yeah, and I know my wife, she was pregnant with, I can't remember which one of our children. I have two daughters. And but she was, you know, kind of, it was early in the pregnancy, the first trimester, and, you know, she had a headache. And I was just like, why don't you just take an Advil or Bayer or something? She was like, no. I was like, that's what you usually do. She's like, no, I'm going to tough this one out because I'm carrying a baby. And I was like, I never really thought. I was like, well, that's probably smart, you know, because normally that's what we would do. It's just, you know, I got a headache, just pop a pill, and, you know, the headache goes away. But she was thinking that, you know, as her brother said, everything has a side effect. Some, you know, so she was just using extra precaution, and maybe that was too much, maybe not, but she was just saying that, you know, I'll just tough this one out. You know, it was a migraine or whatever, and she was like, I'll be all right. You know, I'll tough it out. I was like, okay, well, and I didn't argue with her. I was like, well, that makes sense, you know, just looking out for the baby. So, and, but, you know, you're right, fellas, we don't know, and, you know, even, you know, maybe back in the day we got a little high every now and then. Or maybe not. But sometimes we actually sit back and think, like, you know, maybe something was wrong with me, you know, or something like that. But or you can even flip that around. You know, you might be thinking, well, maybe there was something wrong with my wife. You know, maybe she was, you know, doing a little something that wasn't inhibiting, you know, it was prohibiting the growth of a natural progression of child growth and birth or whatever. I mean, you never know. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. As the brother said, you just got to, you know, we make the decisions as we go. And I want to talk about decisions and to the brothers, the one with the 14-year-old son and the one with the 8-year-old daughter. Do y'all have any other children? Do y'all have any other children?
Yes.
Okay, how many other children do you have, brother?
Two more.
And do either one of the two children have special needs?
No. They just follow what their older sister does. So.
Okay, and she was your firstborn?
Correct.
Now, did you ever think, did it ever go through your mind that your subsequent children would have any kind of special needs?
Yes, it did, but, I mean, you could see, like I said, because they're so close in age, they're 8, 6, soon to be 7, and 5, that... I said 8, soon to be 7. My 6-year-old will be 7 pretty soon. But, you know, they caught up to her rather quickly. Like, right now they're pretty much all, the two youngest ones are surpassing her socially. But, you know, that passed really quickly, you know, as far as me thinking if they would have any problems. The biggest problem that I have with them is that they mimic some of her behavior just because she tends to get away with a little bit more than I normally would allow. So then they try to get away with those same things. And, you know, I got to kind of pull the rings real quick.
Sure, yeah. But were you tempted? So I guess, you know, this is an interesting question, but were you tempted not to have any more children?
Oh, no.
Because of your daughter's, your firstborn daughter's special needs?
Well, the like I said, we didn't realize it until she was about 4. So by then, I already had another child, you know.
Mm.
And so, and then the last one snuck in on us. So,
yeah, we know how that can happen, brother. We know how that can happen. But to the other brother, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask a question, just like you were asking, Rodney.
Yeah, go ahead.
So if you did
say, for instance, if you did find out earlier in the child's life, you know, maybe two. I mean, you know, there's a lot of cognitive skills that the child can learn at 2 years old. If there was any inclination that your child would be special needs, do you think that would have changed your mind, or would you just kind of thought it out a little bit longer? Or did you see yourself still having kids even after?
I probably would have thought it out a little longer, but I ultimately still would have had more.
Right. I'm in the same, you know, I mean, I would agree the same thing. You know, it's you know, heart goes out to you, man. That's why I'm asking. I just, you know, it's one of those things. I love kids, so nothing would stop my production.
Yeah, and to the other brother, the one with the 14-year-old son, do you have any other children?
Yes, I have a 12-year-old daughter.
And does she have any special needs?
Yeah, she needs a lot of money and a lot of attention.
I like that. That's good. But was
as far as you know, any like physical or mental issues? No, she's quite the opposite.
Does anybody here that has children think that they don't have brain damage?
You sound like Bill Cosby or something. That's good words. But brother, did you know you had the 14-year-old, and the 12-year-old is obviously 2 years younger. But did it ever go through your mind? Same question. That your subsequent children will have any kind of special needs? Did that, you know, play into, you know, y'all having one or more children, or did that not even come up at all?
No, not really. And I think a lot of it was because when our daughter conceived, our son was like two.
Right.
So we were just starting to see little bits of concerning health issues with him, but not to the extent that we later learned. And if we had, maybe we would have considered it, talked about it a little longer, but it probably wouldn't have changed our decision.
Good words. How does your family deal with it? And when I say family, how does your wife, you say you got the 12-year-old daughter, your parents, uncles, aunts, cousins, or any other extended family members. This is to, you know, both of you. But, you know, how does your family deal with your 14-year-old son and his special needs? How do they, you know, how does that dynamic play into the family dynamics?
Yeah, well, I think at first, you know, obviously there's a lot of concern and, you know, just wanting to be sure that you know, everything that could be done, could be assessed, could be addressed, was being addressed. Were we, you know, getting all the right help? Were we getting all the right health care? Those kinds of things. And educationally, were we in the right space? So there was a lot of concern from that angle. But as far as you know, we get a tremendous amount of family support, and you know, he's definitely not treated, you know, like he's a misfit or anything like that. In fact, it's quite the opposite. So we get, you know, a lot of support, and you know, we just try to make sure that we help everybody else understand, you know, what his issues are, what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are, and, you know, how to best adapt yourself to meet his needs.
Right.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead, brother. Mm-hmm.
To that point, my question is very simple. And trying to teach other people, when you first find out you have a autistic or a special need or just need a little additional assistance child, Do you feel embarrassed when other folks come around, or did you? Was there a point in that you did feel embarrassed where you would hide the kid, or you didn't know how the kid was going to act, and when it felt that way, you felt embarrassed?
I can't say I've ever felt embarrassed. Probably the biggest emotion that I have with that respect is, you know, just wondering if people understand, you know, like why he might be talking louder than everybody else in the room sometimes, or you know, why it's taking him a really long time to get on the escalator. And you know, it's not always the most comfortable thing, but I wouldn't, from my angle, I wouldn't call it. I've never felt embarrassment, and I think a lot of that is because I early on when we recognized that he had some issues, and we spent a lot of time educating ourselves because you know there was a heck of a lot that we had to learn about, you know, what his shortcomings are and what his strengths are and how we can best, you know, again, position ourselves and position him to reach his potential. And so once we understood why he does some of the things he does and what one of the biggest things he has trouble with is being, you know, is like hyperstimulation. A person who processes stimuli normally can, you know, like be in a crowded mall and, you know, there'd be music playing through the speakers throughout the mall and there's people all around and there's, you know, sights and sounds and everything, and just walk up to an escalator or up to a flight of steps and just walk on down the steps, and you can filter out all the stuff, all the information you don't need, and just make your legs do what they need to do and your arms or whatever and walk down the steps. Well, for him, you know, it's just it's difficult to process all that information coming in at one time. And it's I think there was a book that I read that, you know, described it as like standing in the middle of New York City at rush hour, you know, with horns blaring and, you know, traffic, and you know, it's just a lot of information coming in at one time. So just understanding that what's causing him to, you know, just stand there and freeze, it was not that he's not capable of getting on the escalator and, you know, picking his foot up and stepping forward. It's just that there's like a processing traffic jam happening, and he just needs to be able to, you know, slow things down a little bit, and he'll be able to take a little more time for him to process some things. And so just understanding what the underlying causes are for some things that he does help me, you know, be able to deal with some of the things that he does and some of the situations that it might put you in.
Okay, and what how long, you know, speaking along those lines, how long was it before you felt comfortable leaving him with someone so that you and your wife could simply go out on a date or just have some quality alone time? How long was it before you were able to say, okay, all right, let's go to the movies, you know, he's good to go?
Well, for us, I think that was more, it wasn't so much a function of his any special needs that he had, but just, you know, he was our first kid, and, you know, we tended to hold on to him kind of tightly, and, you know, I think it might have, you know, amped that up a degree, knowing that he had some special needs, especially when he was younger. But you know, once he got older, you know, that then he started going to school and things like that, then that became less and less of an issue. You know, you see, he can go to and we can go to school for half a day, and you come back, and you know, you still get the same kid back.
Yeah.
And so as you start to do, started to do stuff like that when he was like 3-4 years old, and you know, it became easier.
Yeah, I know. I can relate to that with my two girls because, you know, as you say, you know, holding on to them a little tighter. You know, I can count on half a hand. You know, who's allowed to watch my kids, and so many friends like, oh, we can watch them. No, you can't. No, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't. You know, I don't mess around like that. You know, my girls. I'm like, nope. We'll take them with us, or you know, we'll bring them to the barbecue or the family event or whatever if I can't get care for them. So, you know, I agree with you there, brother, as far as holding them tight. But I mean, is there anything else that's different about raising a special needs child? Anything more difficult? I mean, for example, you said you have another daughter, and the other gentleman said he had two younger siblings. Do they feel any sort of jealousy, you know, being that, of course, the special needs child obviously requires some more attention. But is there anything there, or is there anything in general that makes it more difficult raising a special needs child?
Oh, yes, indeed. Well, one of them is, like, right now in the summertime, you know, when you got to find, you know, fortunately, we have a really, really good public school situation. But you know, when it comes to, like, summer camp, for instance, especially as kids get older, it becomes more and more difficult to find a, you know, in the case of my son, who, you know, he's not in the situation where he's wheelchair bound. You know, he's not on the, you know, the extreme end, if you will, of having special needs, and so it's difficult to find, you know, just. For my daughter, for instance, you know, I can pick up a book that's relatively thick, and you know, you can close your eyes and you know, point at a program, and she can go. Not the same for my son. You know, you gotta, you know, really narrow the choices are pretty narrow, and then once you narrow down the choices, then you gotta go see the place, talk to folk, and see if it's a really good match for him, and it's probably going to be really expensive too. So that's one big difference. And yeah, with, you know, with having another child, you know, our son, you know, obviously gets a lot of, you know, special attention, but I don't think my daughter has any issues with feeling like, you know, we give more attention to our son than her, because I think we do a pretty good job at balancing, so they both stay involved in a lot of different things, and in some cases they've been involved in the same stuff. And one other difference, and you know, this is a good, I think, conversation topic that might lead some other folk to chime in. One of the headaches that I've noticed lately is, especially living in an area that we live in, you know, on one hand, yes, we have a lot of great programs for kids who do have specialized needs. But on the same hand, being in an area where there's a lot of, you know, really like high caliber driven folk, in some situations, I have problems with kids who are my son's age, but who are, who function, you know, quote unquote, normally, not being willing to throttle back, if you will, so that he can be included in their friendship circles, in their activities. You know, it's like, if you can't keep up with us, well, that's too bad. We're gone. And so that has been a little bit of a sore spot in some situations for me. I don't know if anybody else has ever experienced that.
Well, I mean, not necessarily kind of the situation, but with my nephew being quadriplegic, I think, hopefully this falls along lines with what we're talking about, you know, my kids and him, they're cousins. So, ever since he, four now. You know, but ever since he's been born, that attention went from, you know, my kids being the grandkids to this additional, you know, to him coming in this world, him being the grandkid, and now him having the special needs. My kids don't get that attention anymore. You know, the Christmas presents are taken over to the next year. That's how far and frequent, you know what I mean? That's how, you know, infrequently that they get a visit from, you know, the grandparents or family members on that side because they're having to go visit, you know, my nephew so much and want to pay him, you know, all this attention and everything. So I think my kids are feeling the effects of it, you know. You know, they want to go see my mom. You know, they want to go see Uncle Tony. They want to go see Aunt Amy, but they just don't have that time for them anymore. So I think, it affects in so many ways, you know, for the immediate family and the extended part of the family when you have a special needs child and all of that attention goes from this part of the family to now just this one single part of the family.
Good words. Anybody else? Now, brother, you mentioned summer camp, but now we all know.
Spend money and lots of it.
Yeah. Now, we all know, all of us on here know that having children is already expensive. But does having a special needs child increase your household expenses in any way other than summer camp?
Yes, indeed. Again, I just tonight, our daughter likes martial arts, and she's very good at it. And so she was going to a place close to home here, and she started going. My son and I would just go watch while she was in class, and the instructors agreed that they would, they were adamant that, hey, you should let your son try too. I'm like, well, okay, well, we can talk about it because, it's going to be a little different and he's going to need some special attention. And they were, adamant that they could handle it and everything. And so we tried it for 6 months and he did pretty well. But, going forward, beyond the initial 6 months, they said, well, what we need to do is to have your son be in the individual class, one-on-one, because it's difficult for, the masters to give him the attention that he needs in a large group setting. So if you want to go forward, we'd recommend the one-on-one program for him. And, yeah, that's quite a bit more expensive. So that's one example. I know that, here in our county, just in the news over the last 5 years, one of the things that has been a big deal is there. If you feel like the school system is not meeting your child's needs, then there's a very, very long legal route you can go down, and if you're successful, you can get your child placed in a private school somewhere and make the county pay for it. Well, as I understand it, that the people who are trying to push that route, and particularly kids who are autistic who need special services because of their autism, that population has just exploded, and so it's putting a lot of stress on the county's resources to be able to meet those special needs. Putting a lot of stress on the county's legal resources because a lot of parents are taking the county to court and trying to get the county to pony up for tuition to go to private school because they feel like their child's needs aren't being met in the in the mainstream population. So it has some some pretty wide reaching ramifications, and I think most of us. Probably everybody on this call is probably aware that, the number of kids who can be considered special needs is definitely trending upward at a pretty good pace.
Mm-hmm. And just along those lines, what about health insurance? Does your health insurance cover everything, or there's sometimes gaps that need to be filled in?
you do spend a lot of money with the well, in our case, you know, there's lots of therapies, and when it comes to, like, for what our son most benefits from, pediatric occupational therapy, that's something that, unfortunately, insurance companies have cracked down a whole lot on. So, like, for instance, a place that he had been going to for probably 5 years or so that was really, really working out well for him, you know, when the economy started going in the tank, insurance companies started really cracking down, and they came through and you know, did some pretty intensive audits and decided that our therapy center wasn't meeting their qualifications to reimburse for their services. And so for, like, the last year that he was in it, we were, you know, just pretty much straight out of pocket for something that he was doing once or twice a week, which can get pretty expensive.
Yeah, I remember my wife was doing some physical therapy for her back. And, you know, as you say, in years past, you know, the insurance covered it. You know, and then all of a sudden they're like, we're not covering that anymore. Because she just had some back problems. She carries a lot of stress in her back and neck area. So, you know, she would need to get it worked out, you know, literally about twice a month to loosen it up. But it would just, you know, build back up. So, you know, she would go, and it was covered by insurance, and she'd have a little copay and everything, but they stopped covering that. So she, you know, literally had to stop going. But good words, brother, good words. It's 10 o'clock, and we got to take it a little bit deeper here. This is where we make a turn, and my brother out there with the 8-year-old daughter, feel free to chime in anytime. But having children is definitely hard on a marriage. But what about having a special needs child? How does that whole dynamic affect your marriages? And that's to either one of y'all. Y'all can jump on that. Or does it affect your marriage? Or have you noticed it affects your marriage?
No, it does. I'm trying to think of my words here. It just requires a lot of patience. And oftentimes, because of our work schedules, we don't get adequate rest to deal with some of her issues, my daughter's issues that she might have. I like the word the brother said, hypersensitivity, because that's one of the things that she has, is that she might throw a temper tantrum or start screaming or hollering over something very simple. And if you're not prepared for that, if you're not rested to deal with her issues, then, you know, you tend to either, you know, start screaming and shouting as well, and then it just brings in that negative tension, that household stress, you know.
And then
listening to these conversations, like, you know, like every week, you know, it just kind of, it made me rethink a lot of things. So, you know, it does have an effect on the marriage, I would say.
Yeah.
What do you say? Go ahead.
You touched on a real good point there, is a work schedule. You know, again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, if you have a child with special needs, particularly as they get older, things get a little more difficult in finding, you know, places for them to go beyond school. So, like, aftercare has been a little more challenging for us as Jared has gotten older and into, you know, he's going into his high school program now. And so, bottom line, we don't send him anywhere for aftercare. And so what that means is, you know, his bus comes back here at 4 o'clock. So that means somebody's got to be here when the bus gets here. And so that means, you know, my wife is at work by like 6:30, which means she's up at 4:30 in the morning. And, you know, when she's gone, here, and I have to, you know, make sure my son gets to his bus and my daughter gets to her school, and then I finally get to go to work. And, you know, a lot of times, by the time I get to work, you know, I feel like I've put in, you know, at least a half a day's work just when I get there. And, you know, so that, you have to, obviously, that, I mean, even if you don't have kids who have special needs, if you just got kids in this area, you know, that whole daily hustle is a stress. So I think what we do, you just have to maintain balance. You know, you have to recognize, like the brother said, it takes, you know, sometimes, you know, our son requires a whole lot of patience, you know, because, you know, one thing he doesn't do very well is transition from one thing to the next. You know, if you ride in the car somewhere and the car stops and it's time to get out, you know, he's going to sit and think about it for a couple minutes before he decides to take his seatbelt off and open the door and get out. And, you know, living around here where you kind of feel this, you know, the need to be running at a certain pace all the time, you know, I definitely find myself having to, you know, take a deep breath and saying, hey, you know, wait a minute. You know, whatever it is we're trying to rush to get to, it can wait a couple more minutes till we get Jared situated here. I think you have to, I know in my work situation where our demographic is heavily skewed towards, you know, 45, 50 years old and older. So there's a lot of men who have no concept of me having to have a heavy participation in drop-off and or pick-up and or school activities and or homework and things like that, because to a lot of them, that was just something that their wives dealt with.
Mm.
And so I think you have to be, you know, for want of a better adjective, if you will, I think you just got to be man enough to walk in there, despite the, you know, the predominant culture, and just say, hey, you know, this is my situation, and you know, this is what I have to do on a daily basis. I will still, you know, get done what I need to get done, and you know, if you want to resist that, then, you know, we can go a step further and go down to EEO and talk about how you have some issues with accommodating a parent with a child with special needs.
Right.
If it doesn't need to go that far. But,
yeah.
But yeah, that's, so that there's a subtle stress there to, you know, put your family on the back burner in the name of the job. And so you just have to, you know, well, what I've done is, you know, I just make sure that, you know, bottom line is I'm getting the things done I need to get done, but I'm not sacrificing, you know, my family at the same time. But there is, you know, that subtle, if very few, if any, people around you are in that situation, then you are kind of the standout in that regard. And you have to deal with that.
Would you say that your marital conflicts, would you say that they increased after your special needs child was born? I mean, at times, did having a special needs child bring y'all closer together, or it sometimes maybe drive y'all further apart?
You addressing that directly to me? I was trying to get somebody else.
If you want to take it, brother, if you want to take
it. Take it. You know, so definitely we've, you know, we've been through some pretty trying situations.
As we all have.
Because of the, you know, because of the whole season. And then, you know, it's you know, it's stressful having to add all the you know, the trips to the various, you know, like my son sees probably 3 or 4 different specialists, you know, at a hospital up in at a facility up in Baltimore, you know, every 6 months, and you know, so that stuff you got to add to your schedule. But I think that the being able to cope with it and to being able to successfully, you know, do the things that we needed to do to one, get him such that his health issues weren't a major concern any longer, you know, as far as seizures, getting him doing what we need to do to get him in the right academic situation, because there were some trying moments there. You know, just showing that we can, you know, two of us together make a pretty good team. You know, in some ways I think that has made us stronger. And, you know, I don't feel like any of the added stress has been, like my other brother said, you know, if you just got kids, period, you know, sometimes you they'll drive you crazy. I don't think it's, in our case, has been that much different than, you know, just anybody else who has two kids.
Good words, good words. And you said something key there. You said we work as a team. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you have to remind your coworkers and everybody that, hey, you know, I got a family, you know, and I'm plugged into what my family's doing. You know, I'm dropping off, picking up, making sure somebody's there and everything. But do you ever keep score of what you do for him, or do you think that it's primarily your responsibility since he's a boy and you're the man, you know, the head of household? I mean, are you keeping score, like, yeah, you know, I picked him up, I did this? Are you running the tally in your mind, and you and your wife on a team now, but you're keeping score? You ever deal with that at all?
Well, my wife just reminded me that, yes, there are some additional differences, you know, like her having to, when I'm not around, because I do travel for work from time to time, you know, having to help somebody get a shower who's bigger than her.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of different. But, yeah, because he's a boy, you know, I kind of feel that more of his, you know, I should be more focused on him and be like the primary for him, if you will, for certain things. And there are certain things that he specifically looks to me for. You know, he tends to see, you know, when he's hungry, you know, he's not looking for me.
He's looking for mom.
Exactly. But you know, when it comes, like, I'm like his hanging partner.
And, yeah.
You know, so when it comes to, you know, doing stuff, doing activities, playing video games or something, or just going somewhere, you know, more often than not, he's looking for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep score? I don't think so. Because I know that, you know, my wife and my daughter, they need, you know, Google Calendar, BlackBerry, you know, iPad, iPhone, and some other stuff to
just to keep up.
So I know what her work schedule is, and you know, I know all the stuff that my daughter is involved in, and so there's, you know, I'm not she's not getting off easy if she's not doing, you know, a whole lot of stuff with my son, and I recognize that.
Yeah, but it's not an issue. Now, we all probably foresaw, you know, how much work having a baby and raising a child or children was going to be. But, you know, did you honestly foresee how much work having a special need was going, special needs child was going to be? Like, when you realize that at that point, it's like, okay.
I never imagined that I'd be going to the depths of research and meetings and, you know, I never imagined that I'd cut a bunch of educators out in a meeting over what I felt were things that they were doing that were shortchanging my son. I never imagined that I'd be doing that sort of stuff. It is a bit of an adjustment, but I think, I guess being the kind of person I am, where I'm just trying to, you know, I'm focused on what does it take to make it, you know, what do we got to do to succeed, and I knew that having kids would be, you know, a whole lot of work because, you know, my own parents put a whole lot of time and energy into me and my brother. Adding the special needs component, you know, I think it's, like I said before, just having kids, you know, I don't know whether it's just particular to this area. I think this area definitely, you know, amps it up a little bit. I think just having kids in general around here is exhausting. I think you add in the special needs component, it's, you know, I think it, you know, is it a little bit more work? Yeah, it's different. I think you're just spending your energy in different ways.
And what you speak of lots to do, but what specifically, what kind of extracurricular activities are available to kids with special needs these days?
Well, again, you know, having intentionally put ourselves in this area, you know, a lot of that was driven by our son's special needs. Fortunately, there's a lot of stuff around here that you know, Special Olympics runs a very good program here. So he's done track and field for a couple of years. But they also have, you know, they have a bowling league. They have basketball, softball. They have a cheerleading team for girls. There's an abundance. He's done a special needs soccer program in fall. There's swimming classes available at very good facilities for kids with special needs. But again, I think it's a function of the area and. You know, the area we lived in prior to here, there wasn't nearly the abundance of activities, and that's one of the reasons we don't live there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, suffice it to say, it's going to cost you, you know, to be in this area, comparatively speaking, and I think that's and we even see that. If you look at the, you know, if you look in the, just in the recreation guide that comes out quarterly, I think there's some subtle differences in the quality and the availability of programs, where in certain wealthier parts of the county. You know, more things are available at higher quality facilities than in other parts of the county. And you can look at that and quickly find out what the discriminator is. And so I think that's a, you know, that's an issue particularly for, you know, for the whole country if, you know, if we have a rising need of kids with special needs, but then there's going to be disparity in the programs that are offered, because, you know, to be honest with you, you know, to be here, you know, we had just built a very nice house, but it was in the wrong county. And so we, you know, 2 years after moving in, we had to walk away. And, you know, we had to put it up for sale and basically start all over again.
And primarily because of your child?
Absolutely because of him.
Wow.
And, you know, so that was, you know, that was a pretty expensive venture. And, you know, like I said, it, you know, not everybody is going to be able to pull off something like that to put their kids where they need to be. And from what I see, and especially with the insurance companies, you know, squeezing down, you know, it being more scrutinous on the kinds of services that they'll reimburse for, I see it being harder and harder for people, you know, who I see economics being a discriminator.
Hello?
Hello?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Me too.
Everybody.
Yeah, sorry about that. I think somebody just hung up and went quiet. But good words, my brother. And you talked about something, and this is to my other brother, too. Feel free to jump in anytime on here. But you talked about making it and trying to, you know, what to do to succeed, how your parents raised you and everything. And, you know, what's going to happen when your son reaches adulthood, or my brother, when your daughter reaches adulthood? Have y'all, either one of y'all, have y'all already thought through things like where they can work, where they're going to live, who they're going to live with, can they live on their own? You know, have y'all thought through that yet as far as adulthood and the special needs that your children have?
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
Yeah, I said, what have you thought through when your daughter reaches adulthood? Have you already thought through things like where she can work, who she's going to live with, you know, can she survive on her own, those sorts of things? Have you already thought through? I know she's only 8 now,
right?
But you know, have y'all, you and your wife, discussed that? Have you thought about it, or is something just way off on the horizon?
No, I mean, we think about it all the time. I mean, what measures we put in place, none really, I should say, just as far as making sure she continues with her program that she has through school. I haven't commented a lot on some of the things that you guys were saying, but as far as expenses and everything,
yes, sir.
Because it actually has saved us money in a sense, because like the one brother said, because of the area that we live in, a lot of the programs are free. Now we do pay, I guess we pay taxes on that to live in that area.
Right.
But, you know, she has a summer program that, you know, as long as we are, you know, stay on top of it, she can go to. In fact, she'll start next week going to that. But, you know, and while I'm sitting there in her, like, treatment plans and everything, you know, I'm always thinking, like, well, what is it that she's going to be able can or can't do, I mean, as she gets older? So I think about that all the time. And plus, she is mild, like I should say, so that at first glance you wouldn't notice anything. So, I mean, I'm still under, like, in a little bit of denial, thinking that hopefully she'll grow out of it when she gets into, like, you know, a little older and realize, hey, I shouldn't be sitting here making these strange noises, or, you know, wanting to watch this little, you know, baby cartoon, in a sense. I should want to do some of these other things to go hang out with these other kids. Like, she likes dressing up and everything. So I'm still in a little bit of denial, hoping that she grows out of it and will be able to go on and have a normal life. But
how old is she, brother?
She's 8.
Okay. I mean, just speaking from my own personal experience, I'm 27. My sister is 31. And growing up, you know, we were younger, and at the time, they didn't really know too much about the condition autism. I'm not sure if that's what you're speaking of, but you know, my sister was mild too, and all I can say is, you know, it took time, you know, especially from a social aspect. She was generally always there from an academic standpoint, but from a social aspect, kind of like you're saying, you know, always wanting to watch, you know, weird things on TV, not really socializing with other people. you know, that's something that she got better with, you know, as time progressed. She started getting more active in the church. And as, you know, I think as people started learning a lot more about, you know, conditioning people with special needs, people were more empathetic, you know, to it. And she started having more friends, which, you know, helped her even further with the whole social aspect of it. So, you know, I would just, you know, certainly say, you know, continue to do what you're doing. But, you know, there certainly is, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel. Because, like I said, my sister, you know, dealt with it at a time when people didn't really even know what it was.
Okay. Good words. I'll take a crack at that. My son actually... thinking about that, before he started the school year that just ended, I walked into my boss and I said, look, because of where my son is academically and his age, it just kind of hit me that you know, I need to be able to give him a lot of attention, you know, for this critical, what I think is a very critical period in his life, and I don't think I can do a job like this where, you know, I've got to hit the road, you know, once twice a month, and so I really was set to walk away from what I do today. Fortunately, they were willing to give me the flexibilities that I need to be able to handle my son's situation. But you know, it like, yeah, obviously that's a concern for everybody who has kids. You know, what's going to happen after you put in all this time and energy, what's going to become of them, you know, once they get beyond school age. Even bigger issue for like someone like me who take a very different path than what we would call a normal path. And so one of the things that we've seen is, and it really enlightened me, because, you know, growing up where I grew up, you know, I hadn't seen programs like this where kids were, you know, one, able to go to a really good school up until, you know, they were 21, and once they get beyond the high school age, you know, a school that has these relationships with, you know, these government agencies and employers where kids, you know, have some pretty cool places to go work, and they can go to community college, and there's programs set up specifically for them. So, you know, that has eased my concern, you know, to a degree, but it's, you know, it wasn't the, you know, it's not the path that any of us expect to go down, where, you know, you think of, you know, a kid who might, you know, be living with you eventually for the rest of your life, and then wondering what happens, you know, when you're no longer around. And I remember talking to a lady who has a son at my son's school, and she actually said she would rather bury her son, rather see him pass away before her, because that way she wouldn't have to worry about who would take care of him when she passed on.
Wow. That's heavy.
That was a heavy statement.
That's heavy. That's good words, brother. Thank you for sharing that. And I want to bring these other guys back into the conversation here. And now I know some of y'all are planning on having more kids. I got to get a drink of water on that. But, and some of y'all newlyweds may be planning to have your first child. But what if your next child or your first child has special needs? How are you going to respond? How are you going to react? Are you even prepared for that? You know, you've heard the brothers sharing about what they have to you know, the dynamics that they have to deal with and they have to adjust in, and they have to be patient. And it's a lot, you know, going on with that. But so in your case, with the fellas that, you know, still in the child bearing years, what if your next child has special needs? How are you going to respond? How are you going to react to that situation?
I'd say I'd have to, I'd definitely have to lean on other people that I know that are going through it. I mean, I understand, fortunately, that it's a possibility. And my niece now, my wife of 1 month now, her niece was born with autism. And so, you know, that's something that's been a part of her life for a great deal of time now, for the last 5 years. And, you know, so I don't know if it's something that you can ever really prepare for, you know, especially from a mental aspect. But I will say, you know, that's something that, you know, thinking about saving extra money or, you know, taking extra, you know, classes, you know, getting involved in, you know, in churches or, you know, getting on calls like this and just educating myself to the nth degree on different conditions that you can possibly have when your child is born is something that, you know, I can do. So I think that's the best step that I can, you know, to really take is, you know, hopefully from a financial standpoint, prepare myself for, you know, any situation. And, you know, from an intellectual standpoint, you know, learn as much as I can about the different disorders that you can potentially have.
Yeah, that's good words. I think even tying back to the first hour, you know, when we have children, that's not something anybody really thinks about. I mean, primarily we're thinking about the health of the child, but we're just thinking from the standpoint that they're going to be, you know, not have special needs, you know, as the brother said earlier, you know, quote-unquote normal. But, I mean, that's something, as you said, you don't think about, you know, and you're a newlywed, you've been married a month, and I don't know, you know, if you thought about your first child, your second child, if y'all had planned on, I don't know if you had thought about if one of your children were going to be special needs until, you know, you got on tonight or saw the talk. I don't know. But, you know, as you say, we just put it out there because, as, you know, the brothers are sharing, it's a reality. You know, it's a reality and something that, you know, we have to deal with. But, you know, just, I know some of you other brothers are out of the childbearing age. But what if your grandchild has special needs? You know, has anybody ever thought about that? You know, what if your grandchild has special needs? Have you even thought that far? Does anybody have grandchildren?
Yes.
Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So, has you thought about that, brother? You know, if, you know, how is your grandchild now?
A month.
Okay. Had it ever crossed your mind that, as the brother said, he didn't find out till she was 4 or 5 that they were going to have that they were going to need some special attention? Have you thought, you know, when you hold your 1-month-old grandbaby, have you ever thought about, you know, catering to her special needs and making sure, you know, that you know, they were taken care of as far as activities and summer camp? I mean, you know, that if you had to get involved in that, or their mother and father had to, you know, just had you thought about that at all?
The thought runs across your mind prior to them being born, but tonight has pretty much given me some more insight. And to answer your question, if I had to do it all by myself, I would.
I'm about to be off in a minute.
If I didn't have any help, if she turned out with any special needs, if I didn't have any help, I would do it all by myself.
Good words. Spoken like a true head of household. But what about, oh, I'm sorry, somebody say something? Anybody else?
I think somebody was kind of going down this path earlier in the call.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of related to a different topic in the conversation. But, you know, things about having a kid with special needs is that you have to recognize, foremost, as parents have to know what a kid can and can't do, and when.
Yeah, you're fading on me. Speak up a little bit.
When what the doctor says is the right answer, and when, you know, know, when it doesn't really hold water. And, like, one of the things, and this was kind of heavy, one of the things that a neurologist told us at a well-respected hospital was that our son would never understand spoken language and that we would have to put him in a sign language-based school program. And also that same doctor was adamant that our son needed a daily regimen of some pretty powerful anti-seizure medicine with a laundry list of side effects. And we were put in a situation where we were having to really, really advocate for our son and say, look, you're basically going on what you've seen in one episode, and we see and believe something very different because we live with this kid every day. And so today, our son talks a whole lot. He sometimes talks more than we'd like him to.
Praise God.
In fact, he told his mother a couple weeks ago, come here, let me talk to you for a minute. And so it when you have a situation where a kid has special needs and you have potentially ongoing medical situation, that brings up a whole realm of conversations too, where you kind of put yourself in a position where you're saying, are you gonna what the doctor says, my wife is back here saying trust God and go with what may run counter to what the medical advice is telling you, because it doesn't seem, what they're offering doesn't seem to add up for you.
And speaking of your wife, did y'all ever have any marital counseling or mediation to discuss some of the issues around having and raising a special needs child?
No, we didn't.
What about my other brother? Did y'all have anything?
What was that?
What's up, brother? I said, we're talking about, of course, special needs, and the brother was just saying, just sharing his story. But the question I threw out there as you were joining is, did you ever have any marital counseling or mediation with your wife to discuss some of the issues surrounding having a special needs child?
Well, I got one. My son's autistic. My middle child is autistic. And, no, we just deal with it. That's the strongest point that he has in his life is his family. He's kind of blessed to be the middle kid. There's somebody in front of him, somebody behind him.
Yeah.
So he's kind of blessed to see, this is how you do it. One shows him how to do it. And then later on in life, both of them show him how to do it. He don't want to be outdone by his little brother. You best believe that.
Yeah.
They told me he'll never even write when he was like 3. But at age 4, he was riding a bike with no training wheels because he didn't want to be outdone by his brother. You know what I'm saying? So don't put limitations on anybody. Autism is like one of those things you just can't put a limitation on. You never know what they're going to do.
Yeah. And do you have any, Mike, do you just got sons? Do you have any daughters?
I got a daughter. My oldest is a girl.
Okay. And you actually joining right on time, brother, because I wanted to ask you specifically, and to my other brother that has a 14-year-old, he's got a son and a daughter, but to both of you, the fact that it's your son that has the special needs rather than your daughter, does that dynamic, make you feel any different? The fact that it's your son that has the special needs and not your daughter? I mean, because, we all guys here, and, men and, hanging out with the fellas, all that stuff. I mean, is that the dynamic that it's your son that has the special needs rather than your daughter? Does that make you feel any different?
I would say, on my end, I would say no, because he's a physical monster. You know what I'm saying? He's like, right now he's like 220.
Mm.
He's like 5'11", 220. You know, he's not the type of person you don't want to, you know what I'm saying? You don't want to go after him, you know. You're not going to pick on him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? His sister is like, my daughter's like 6 foot tall and about 190 pounds herself. So, I mean, they all grew up big. All my kids are real big. So it's not like he's a physical monster. He's not like a little wimpy kid or nothing like that. He's never been wimpy. He'll handle his own. So, no, I don't feel threatened that he's a male and has a special needs. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Good words.
I can't speak for everybody, but, you know. Just,
yeah. What about my other brother out there with the 14-year-old?
Yeah. Well, I admit that from time to time, you know, having grown up in a household where sports was a big deal, and having played a lot of sports and still, you know, enjoy, you know, watching sports and, you know, participating when to the extent that my 40 plus year old knees will let me. So having a son who has probably you know, his mom's competitive spirit, and you know, he's just as happy to watch.
Yeah.
He's just happy to just be out there and, you know, just watching some people running around. You know, it does you know, it's different. It's 180 degree turn for me from that perspective, and honestly, there have been times where you know, like my son is like, you know, not quite the monster that the previous brother was saying, but he's a pretty big guy. He's, you know, he's like 5'4", 5'5", and 180 pound range.
Big for a 14-year-old.
Yeah, he's big. He's a big kid. He always has been pretty chunky. And there have been, you know, guys who don't know him, and because I think somebody else mentioned this too, if you just walk up to him and you see him, it's not really readily obvious that he has any special needs or anything. And so people, you know, guys come up, man, you know, he must play football, right? And, you know, then I have to, you know, speak to that. And say, well, no, he doesn't. And I honestly have caught myself on more than one occasion, like, say, when I'm taking him to his Special Olympics training sessions or something, and, you know, being the kind of personality that I am, you know, I'm, like, hopping out the car and, come on, man, we got to go. We can't be last. We can't be behind. Or, know, if the group is moving from one area to another, you know, wanting to be, you know, at the minimum with the group and certainly not the one lagging behind, and, you know, then having to back off because my son, you know, just ain't pressed like that, you know, to be first or, you know, to be at the front. And my daughter is very much like that, but yeah, so it is different, and it's just something that you just accept as reality and say, hey, you know, this is who my son is, and, you know, it doesn't make him any worse than anybody else. It's just who he is. He's a great kid, and he has his own strengths and likes, and, you know, so those would be the things that we focus on. You know?
Well, let me ask you this, brother, and that's good words, and this is kind of a deep question. And feel free to not answer it if you like, but, you know, you mentioned sports and growing up, you know, sports was a big thing in your household. But with your son, you know, having the special needs and your daughter doesn't, and you're not able to, you know, like you said, share those things with him, you know, like jumping out the car and, you know, everything. Did you ever feel angry at God, you know, at any point, like, man, you know, not that you're angry at God, but did you ever feel that emotion, like, man, you know, my little son, football player, you know, we're going to play sports.
But why me?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, no. You know, I've never felt that emotion. And probably a lot of that is because of my my spiritual background, and that he is who he is because that's who God intended him to be. And
amen.
I don't feel like, you know, I don't feel like I've been shortchanged or anything, because I tell you, with that first night that he had a seizure, year and a half old, and, you know, I've never even so much as broken a bone, I don't think, in my lifetime. Never, you know, aside from maybe getting your tonsils out or something like that, never spent a whole lot of time in a hospital. You know, here I am in, you know, Duke University, pediatric intensive care, you know, son with a seizure, and I don't know why. But I tell you what, I saw a whole lot of other people, kids in there, who are not walking out with their kids anytime soon.
Mm.
And, you know, I remember that next day when I was leaving, I'm like, you know, obviously it was bugging me, and, you know, it was all this, you know, why did this happen to him? But seeing that scene also, you know, kind of grounded me in saying, well, you know, at least you're walking out of here with your kid. And,
yeah.
You know, your kid woke up this morning, you know, wondering where the pancakes and orange juice is. So I can't really say I've ever felt that emotion of, you know, feeling like I got cheated or something.
Yeah, and you talked about your faith and your spirituality. Do you think that there's a lesson that God is trying to teach you and or your wife? I mean, what do you think is the purpose of all of this as raising a special needs child? What's the lesson?
That's a good question. You know, I know it, you know, Jared being who he is has definitely led us into some people's lives and helped us change the ways some people think about themselves and think about the world. I think there's definitely a ministry, a testimony in his very existence just because of who he is and the fact that he has, but yet, you know, like I told you, the one brother told me a couple years ago, never seen that kid, rarely ever seen that kid not smiling. Then I know kids who have any issues.
Complaining all the time.
And, you know, just walking around, you know, looking like, you know, they're refugees or something. I don't know if there's a lesson necessarily, but there's definitely been a lot of lives that we've touched and a lot of people that we've gotten to know just because of Jared's special needs that, you know, probably have touched these people's lives or been in these situations and had Jared show people a different angle in life and just enlighten people about kids with special needs.
Right. And speaking of that enlightenment, do you think that pastors should bring this topic up as part of their premarital counseling with prospective couples? You know, the brother just said he'd been married a month. I guarantee his pastor didn't talk about, well, what if you have a special needs child? I mean, so do you think that pastors should add this to their repertoire to say, hey, You know, have y'all talked about children? You know, would the what ifs? Do you think that that should be added as discussion point?
No.
No.
No. I mean, just because you don't know what you're gonna get. You don't know what God's gonna give you. You know, I don't know where my life would be without my son. You know, when times get rough, I always look at him.
Mm.
You know, and say, yeah, I get strength from him. I really do. I get a lot of strength from him. So, I mean, I don't look at it as like a curse or what you say, you know, count your blessing. He is a blessing.
Mm.
Him being here is a blessing. You know?
That's good words.
But he didn't have any, like I heard, like his son was in the hospital with seizures and stuff. I didn't go through any of that. Just that he didn't talk he was 18 months old, didn't talk, you know. 18 months old and not walking, you know. Then one day he just got up and started walking and never failed, you know. Then you take that in, then look, age four, maybe four and a half. He may have been four and a half. He's riding a bike with no training wheels, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that's a long way from the, you know. When I take him swimming, you can't tell he's autistic. If you saw him in the water, he'd be like, "That's like one of the other kids."
Yeah, yeah.
I don't treat him any differently than I do the other two. He used to get spankings just like the other ones did. Up to get a beating just like everybody else.
Yeah. Speaking of training wheels, my daughter, she's six, and you know, she doesn't have any special needs or anything, she's eight, but I think it was. And it had to be like she was six or seven before I took the training wheels off. You know, I'm like, come on. You know, it's not that hard. But, you know, along those lines, what if your healthy son or daughter was in a car accident or was shot or brutally beaten to the edge of their life, and all of a sudden your healthy son or daughter became special needs? Then what? What are you going to do? You've heard the brothers share, you know, they've had it, you know, from toddler, you know, on up. But what if you, you know, you got a teenager, you got an adult, you know, son or daughter that's out there, and next thing you know, you get a call, it's like, yo, your son or daughter's in the hospital. You know, they're barely going to make it. And then if they do make it, as the brother said earlier, you know, we got, do you want to remove the feeding tube? Do you want to pull the plug? You got to make some decisions. So what if your healthy son or daughter got in a situation and became special needs? Have you thought about that dynamic?
I have, because, I mean, and I just deal with it. You know, it's my child.
Yeah.
What kind of father would I be if I didn't step up?
Yeah, I have to agree with you, man. It's just one of those things that I have to, hey, I had to make changes in my life, changes in my plan to make sure that they're okay.
See if you can step up. What you going to do, run away? What you going to do?
Shut out of the ministry, run away.
Exactly. Not us. Not here. I want to tell y'all a brief story about Rodney Rogers, and that is not me. My name is not Rodney Rogers. But bear with me, fellas, because we're almost to the end. But Rodney Ray Rogers is a retired NBA player who last played power forward for the 76ers. And he was the fourth and youngest child. And his father left the family and moved to Texas when he was just a toddler. And his father eventually died when he was 8 years old. At the tender age of 16, Rodney's mother was nearly killed in a car accident. She sustained severe head injuries and required two major operations. She was in a coma for over 3 months and remained hospitalized for over 3 months. And even after she returned home, she still had memory loss and needed some extra care. While his mother continued to recover, Rodney moved with a gentleman by the name of Nathaniel Brooks, who was once his youth league coach. And he spent his last 2 years of high school with the Brooks family. Rodney attended Hillside High in Durham, North Carolina. And as an athlete, he was known as the Durham Bull. He was a two-time All-State selection and was named 1990 North Carolina State Player of the Year. As a junior, he averaged 23 points and 10 rebounds, and as a senior, he averaged 28 points and 12 rebounds on a team that finished 27-2
and advanced to the quarterfinals of the state 4A playoffs. From 1990 to 1993, Rogers played basketball at Wake Forest, where he won the 1990-91 season Rookie of the Year honor over this fella by the name of Grant Hill. I'm sure y'all have heard of him. In 1993, Rodney was also named ACC Player of the Year, averaging 21 points and 7 rebounds. His final college statistics were 19 points, 8 boards, and his college jersey, number 54, was retired in 1996 by the Demon Deacons. And he ended up being selected by the Denver Nuggets as the number 9 draft pick in the 1993 draft. Fast forward to the year 2000, Rodney averaged 14 points per game coming off the bench and won the NBA Sixth Man of the Year award. And in the year 2006, Rodney finally retired from the NBA. And after retiring, he returned back to Durham and went to work for the city of Durham as a heavy equipment operator. And he took the job simply because he liked working with heavy trucks. By 2008, he was even promoted to supervisor. Now, most of his coworkers didn't even know that he had been in the NBA or that he was pretty much financially set for life. In addition to all that, Rodney even started his own trucking company and was usually the lead driver. He was a retired millionaire who still got up at 3:30 a.m. to drive heavy trucks down the quarry. During this time, Rodney was also a volunteer girls basketball coach at a local middle school and co-founded a youth football team. His hobbies included hunting, riding motorcycles, riding ATVs, horseback riding, and fishing. As I close, on November 28, 2008, Rodney was involved in a dirt bike accident. He hit a ditch while riding through a trail and flipped over his vehicle's handlebars. He was first flown to Duke University Medical Center, where the brother just said his son was, with the seizures. And a few days later, was flown by air ambulance to the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, if y'all don't know, the Shepherd Center specializes in rehabilitating people with spinal cord and or brain injuries. Rodney, the Durham Bull, is now paralyzed from the shoulders down as a result of this accident. And doctors have given him only a 5% chance of ever walking again. Does anybody know Rodney Rogers?
Heard of him.
Didn't he play for the Celtics, too?
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Go ahead,
B-Town. I'm from Durham, and Rodney was a great friend of mine. And I remember the phone call when I got it, when they said he was messed up. One of my boys was with him. And they always go bike riding. I was never the bike rider, so I always stayed on the side. But we all balled together, lived, grew up together. Played together in high school, and Thad, who he stayed with, actually died 3 months before. Thad Jr., the one he, his father was our AAU basketball coach, and Thad Jr. played ball with us. And he died on a bike accident where somebody ran him off the road 3 months prior to this happening. You can kind of see how this kind of went downhill. And, Rodney, they always go bike riding and four-wheel riding in Warren County. So they were on their way back, and it was getting dark, and they usually follow the same trail. And I guess he just hit a ditch and flipped over. And as big as strong as he is, you're talking about 6'7", 4% body fat, a good solid 260, this strong ox. And he got back up and got on his bike. But then when he got to the car and they were going to take him, you know, he's like, man, I'm feeling numb, you know, take him to the hospital. That's when he became paralyzed. Because he moved, if they would have just left him there and called the ambulance, he probably wouldn't have been paralyzed as he is now, but because he got up and went to the car and then drove back, they drove him to the hospital. By the time he got to the hospital, he lost all feelings in his arm, neck, and body. So he was riding around with a broken neck.
Wow.
On dirt road?
You know, big fields in the country field. They go riding out there all the time.
And why?
And,
go ahead.
And so when we talk about it, you know, he has a couple kids. And with all the tragedies that was happening before that, it was tough on him and his family. But, you know, especially his business, he had, you know, he did have a trucking business. And it really shocked me when I found out he was working for the city. I'm like, why are you locked up? He just needed benefits, you know. At the time, he just needed benefits, and he had his own trucking company, and everything was going good. He just liked working. I mean, he comes from a working family, you know, a strong working family. But it can happen for anybody at any moment of the day.
There you go.
A special accident. I mean, we talked about it last week where, you know, God is in charge, and either he's going to spare your life or he's going to make adjustments to your life or he's going to take your life. And you never get prepared for it. But one thing that he was is that his work ethic made him a strong, willing person. So, you know, to this day, you know, I still ask about him. And he's still paralyzed, but he's still doing his thing. Still has he still goes up to the job every day, make sure everybody goes to work and everything like that. So he's good people.
Yeah, that's good words, and that was, thanks, P-Town. That's the whole point why I told that that story, is that it could happen anytime to you or to your child. And as we close, as I get y'all out of here, only a couple more questions. But to my brothers that are raising special needs child or children, is there any advice that you would give to the brothers that don't have a special needs, that don't have a child with special needs? Is there any advice you can give to the brothers that don't have a child with special needs? What advice would you give
them? Well, one of the things we didn't touch on was, you know, how you do you do anything to enlighten your own children about how they should the things they need to do differently, if any, if they have, you know, kids in their space who have special needs. Because I know a lot of school programs now do some mainstreaming of kids with special needs. So, because like I mentioned earlier, one of the things that mainstream kids, and the kids had a difficult time. They didn't even recognize that they needed to do some things a little bit differently so that my son could be included in some of the things that they were doing. I remember one specific incident where we were kind of sitting around, and I think they were playing some game or something, and it didn't even dawn on them that they should ask my son if he wanted to play. They just assumed that he couldn't or didn't want to because he didn't talk to him. Standoffish or anything like that. It's just that they didn't ask him, then he wouldn't go volunteer. And then I was like, you know, why don't you just ask him if he wants to play? And like, oh, yeah, maybe we should ask him. When they did, lo and behold, he got up and he played with them. And just, you know, there was repeated incidents where, you know, even some of the parents had to remind him, hey, you know, don't forget about Jared over here. Because the boys would just, you know, their own thing and assume that everybody's just coming along and, you know, not even, you know, give some acknowledgement to, we actually had two boys in that organization who had special needs. situations where the kids who did not have any special needs would basically just leave the other two behind, like they weren't even there. And so I think one thing is that, you know, just make sure your kids know that they may be in situations where everybody ain't like them.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll say the same thing. Like, growing up in Suitland, Maryland, I had a friend named Rod. He had cerebral palsy real bad. You know, he was been, Ronnie was like 8 years older than us. I was like 10. He was like 18. He was a good friend. And I remember one time he threw a snowball, ice ball, and hit me in the face with it. And just like my reflexes was to fight him. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't hit nobody with an ice ball. And, you know, without even thinking, I went up to him and punched him in the face without even thinking about it, you know. Then I said, oh, snap, I forgot. He got cerebral palsy, you know what I'm saying? You know, so I, like, apologized. I bloodied his nose. I took him home, you know. I carried him home, make sure he was okay, you know. But my son, he's like, you know, he, like I said, I treat him like just like all the other two.
Mm-hmm.
He'll tell you, you know, he doesn't get away with nothing. He's not. I see a lot of these kids with autism that, you know, you see on films and all that. Half of that, they spoiled. I'm telling you. My son, he had this one thing where he couldn't express himself. Only time he ever flips out or act crazy or you really got to worry or he might hurt you is when he's hungry. Because he don't come out and say, I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
He'll just have a fit. You know, he'll have a, so just, and it gets worse and worse when he gets hungry. So I got into a habit of asking him, are you hungry? And he'll look at me like he's going, you know, like he's going to tear me apart. And I'm like, are you hungry? And he'll look at me again. You know that look somebody give you like they're about to hurt you.
Yeah.
I go, are you hungry? He goes, yeah, Daddy, I'm hungry. I said, okay, well, let's go get something to eat.
Good word. Yeah, good words, Mike.
And when you have kids like that, you know, just like the gentleman just said, everybody's not going to be like you.
Right.
It's not a perfect world, so, you know, some kids are going to be different. So.
Good words. And I want to flip that question around real quick to the brothers that don't have a special needs child. What advice would you give to the brothers that do have a special needs child? And they've been talking all night. What advice would you give them? Since they have a special needs child.
They'll never start loving it. That's it.
Oh, yeah, never that.
Good words.
Don't ever give up on them.
Never. I don't give my kids no limits. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I didn't show him how to ride a bike with no training wheels. He did it on his own. He looked at me one day and said, take the wheels off.
He gone.
He gone. He used to ride a bike around the neighborhood. Remember 9/11 happened?
Yeah.
It was one of the most beautiful days in D.C. I can remember. And my kids wanted to go out and play. And I said, well, they don't know nothing about what's going on. So, yeah, go out and play. Have a good, you know, go out and play.
Yeah.
All the neighbors, I mean, it must have been like three or four of them, came to my house and was like, why are you letting your kids play on such a bad day, blah, blah, blah. I said, God made this day. It's a beautiful day out here. They don't know nothing about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is an adult thing that's going on. Let the kids play. Let the kids be kids, you know? And that's what I do. I let my kids be kids. I don't put no limits on them.
Good words.
You never know. I bet you Einstein was autistic. You know what I'm saying? Think about it.
Yeah, good words. And this is the final question, brothers, before the conclusion. And this question is for anybody. What advice would you give to a brother to effectively manage the quality of his marriage once the kids arrive, no matter whether the kids have special needs or not? What advice would you give to the brother to effectively manage the quality of his marriage once the kids arrive, no matter whether the kids have special needs or not?
A date night.
Date night?
Yeah, absolutely. Here's one of my things. I've put this to my wife a few years ago, and I tell other guys this too. You know, when you get to the point where you're married, you have kids, and you know, you got automobiles, you might have house, yard, all these responsibilities, and your job,
category. You know, stuff that you won't, you can't negotiate on. You absolutely, you know, you have to go to work. You have to do the stuff for the kids. You have to take the kids here, and you got to put the, like the brother said, the date night type stuff, the relationship with your wife, the time with your wife, you got to put that in the must-do category, non-negotiable.
Good words. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think he just hit the nail. I think he just hammered it. I mean, nailed it just now. It's about whether you have a special needs kid or not, your wife, your spouse has to be still the first priority, and vice versa, because together you all can conquer anything, you know, and just keep that, you know, in mind, you know, just always keep the marriage and that union first before any child, before anything, and I think that you'll be fine.
Good words. Anybody else? Well, fellas, we've reached the end of our show. But before the conclusion, I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
First, I would like to thank each one of the brothers that shared your stories tonight. But I want to thank one brother in particular. Ryan, you still there?
Yep, I'm still here.
So those of you, some of you may know, most of you probably don't. But that's my big brother, and the young man he was talking about is my nephew. So, and also, I got another confession. Pop, you out there?
Yeah, I'm here. I enjoyed the conversation tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Pop. For the record, how old are you, Pop? Just for the record.
60.
60 years old. Your first time on the show?
Yes, it is.
So your immediate reaction to this thing we got going on is what?
It's great. A very positive thing, I think. And I'm certainly sorry I hadn't joined you all before to listen in or participate, but I will in the future. And I got to say that I'm proud of both of you as my sons, but, Ryan and dealing with a child with special needs, I'm very proud of the way he's handling himself in that situation, because when we have our grandchildren, it's very difficult at times to deal with a child with special needs, and you have to be very patient. And so we're here for you anytime you need us to help. But you make us very proud at the way you and your wife are handling the situation.
Good words. And with that,
make us cry, Rod.
Go ahead.
No, never that. We got to draw the conclusion, and then we got to close this thing down. But here's the conclusion, fellas.
Y'all don't know that my pop had some experience dealing with a special needs child, because Rod is crazy too.
Well, they already know I'm crazy. They already know I'm crazy, brother. But yeah, good words, Pop. Good words, brother. All children, as my brother mentioned in the first hour, all children, every single one of them are special and thus have special needs. Sometimes we only think of children that have severe physical and mental disabilities as the only ones who have special needs. However, every child has needs that we as parents must address. Whether a child is academically gifted, learning disabled, or at some stage in between, they still need adults to be alert to what those often hidden needs might be. Many people are often surprised to learn that gifted children with high IQs may be physically or learning disabled, but these children learn how to compensate for their disabilities. As my brother Mike just said, did y'all know that teachers actually considered Albert Einstein to be slow? Or that Thomas Edison couldn't read until he was 12 years old. Or that Walt Disney was dyslexic. So even if your children are academically gifted, they aren't immune to physical and or learning difficulties.
Or on the other hand, if your children are experiencing physical and or learning difficulties, it doesn't mean that they won't ever be successful. But if you take a moment to really think about it, fellas, you'll probably realize that all of us have special needs. Maybe you're not very good at spelling or punctuation. Or maybe you're like me and need a pair of glasses just so that you can see. The list goes on and on and on. But we all learn how to adjust and cope with our special needs, and our children will too. As heads of our households, we just have to know to be there with a sympathetic ear, an open mind, and most of all, some understanding. That concludes our show for the evening, fellas. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Virtual Talk Show, produced by and brought to you by the Head of Household. We hope that you enjoyed the show. You can join us again next Tuesday, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And next week's topic will be... To be determined. For more information, please feel free to visit our website, www.householdstress.com. That website, again, is www.householdstress.com.
You're now free to move about the country.
Hey, Rod, can I mention one more thing?
I think he's gone.
I'm still here.
Oh, you still